The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, another busy week for you with the two full rounds of J1 fixtures to get through.
Yeah, very busy. Yesterday was a bit of a horror show here. First, having to get up at 3 a.m. for the first time in about 5 months didn't sit right with me. And then had a power cut just as the later games were kicking off. So I'm playing catch up a bit.
I see. Yes, you're up early to catch the early game, the lunchtime kickoff at the Sapporo Dome. Considole hosting Yokohama F. Marinos that we'll get to later on. Scott McIntyre will join us for a full review of J1 Match Day 7. Of course, we'll touch on the results from Wednesday's Match Day 6 as well. But first, we're joined by Dan Olowitz of the Japan Times for the latest on the coronavirus situation at Nagoya Grampus, which led to their Match Day 7 clash away to Hiroshima being postponed on Sunday. Dan, welcome back to the podcast. And what's the lie of the land as we record on Monday night Japan time?
Thanks for having me, as always. It's a pleasure. It's Monday night, and boy, what a tumultuous Sunday we had. Nagoya, well, I guess it goes back to the story really begins on Friday, when Nagoya Grampus announced that Kazuya Miyahara had tested positive for the coronavirus. It was the first positive test for the first infection in the league since early June, when two other Grampus players, Mu Kanazaki and Mitch Langerak, were both infected. And so that happened, and as a result of that, I think that positive test came in on Friday because Miyahara had registered a fever, and that's why they tested him. And because of his positive test, they tested everyone on the team, essentially, and they found two more positive tests on Saturday. One was Shuto Watanabe, and the other was a team staffer who has not been named. This is totally allowable. The J League's guidelines are pretty clear about protecting the privacy of anyone who tests positive. Essentially, they don't have to give out their names if those who have been infected don't want to. So once they got those tests in, they had to go back and figure out who had close contact, quote-unquote, with the two positive infections on Saturday. And all of this is happening while 16 players, as well as a team official, had already traveled to Hiroshima. So the situation was that in order for players to register, to be registered to the match day squad, they had to be cleared. They had to not have a fever, not show symptoms, not be a close contact of anyone who did have the coronavirus. And what happened in the wee hours of Sunday morning was that they essentially weren't able to establish who was and wasn't a close contact. And as a result, they decided to cancel the game.
Right. So even though they got all of those other negative tests, yeah, the fact that they couldn't clear the close contact protocol meant that, yeah, the game wasn't able to be played as scheduled.
Yeah, it's important to realize that it was this protocol that caused Chairman Murai to call off the game. It wasn't the tests themselves. Had, even though everyone else had tested negative, they still had to establish the close contacts. They still have to understand who was in contact with the two, especially, you know, because there really wasn't that much time between Watanabe testing positive, or excuse me, between Miyahara testing positive and Watanabe and the staffer testing positive. So they do have to figure this out, and it's pretty clear that they had to have been infected by through different sources, and that's pretty much all we know for certain. Honestly, I listened into the press conference of the J-League NPB task force today. The medical experts said that Grampus essentially did everything they were supposed to do. They followed protocol. They've been studious in cleaning up and disinfecting the team facilities. They've been keeping everyone, you know, wearing masks, which is what everyone's supposed to do. So, yeah, it just goes to show you how easy it is to catch this thing. And even if you're doing everything that you're supposed to be doing, there's still a risk.
Has it been established since that there was no close contact between Watanabe and the team official and the rest of the players? And does that then mean that their future games are not currently in question?
Yes, that was established. The team itself has decided to test all the players, including those who live in the team dormitory, and all the staff, including those who work in the team dormitory, twice, on today, Monday, and Wednesday. And then on Friday, the J-League is going to test everyone again, and that's part of the J-League's biweekly testing of the entire league. So Grampus are going to be the most well-tested team in the league, at least in the short term. They decided back when they established their testing center that they were only going to test everyone every 2 weeks. There's talk about potentially moving that up to weekly.
Yeah, that was the next question I was going to bring to you, actually, because obviously Miyahara passed the J-League test when that was conducted, and then when he did test positive, it left Grampus with so little time to then test the rest of the team and then try and establish the contacts and whatnot. So even if they did manage it, it would have cost them training time ahead of the game, and it's just not really feasible to be doing that, just reacting late to everything, rather than just having maybe a weekly test at the beginning of each week, and then you can then react accordingly.
No, and it's going to be even more difficult. I mean, we were very lucky in that there isn't a midweek game this week, so they do have a full 6 days to get things in order before they play Kashua Reysol on Saturday, August 1st. But once you start getting into these crowded schedules, midweek fixtures, Levan Cup games, you know, if a team gets caught in a bad cycle where one or two players are infected and then they have to test everyone and then establish the chain of infection, that can potentially throw off two or three games. Now, in theory, as I think we've gone over in the past, a team needs to be able to register 14 players, including a goalkeeper, to be able to play. So that's the minimum. But all those players, even if they're coming from the academies or the youth teams or the under-23s or whatever, they all still need to be cleared. So we're going to have to figure this out. I think that we're lucky that things don't seem too severe. The two who tested positive on Saturday don't seem to be showing symptoms. But it shows that there were a couple, maybe not necessarily gaps in the league's guidelines, but stuff that needed to be written out more clearly, and they're working towards that.
So you mentioned the lack of a midweek game this week, Dan. Has that turned out to be a godsend for both Grampus and the J-League that this has occurred during a week where there's no midweek games? Are you confident that had they been scheduled to play this Wednesday, so 2 days from now as we record, are you confident they would have been able to fulfill that fixture, or would it have been almost impossible?
I mean, now knowing that, knowing what we know, I think they probably would have. Of course, we don't know what the results of today's tests are. So in the morning, if they announce that someone else has tested positive, then who knows if they would have been able to pull off something for Wednesday. I imagine they would have managed somehow. But that's still putting the team at a massive disadvantage. then you get away teams or whoever their opponents are maybe feeling a little bit hinky about it. There were lots of questions during Sunday's press conference about whether there was concern on the Racehole side, especially because manager Nelsinho just turned 70, so he could be particularly at risk. It's not quite a nightmare scenario, but it's a very difficult situation. It's a very tricky situation for everyone to navigate, even if they're doing everything right.
This is now Nagoya's fifth positive test, and they're like way ahead in terms of every club with the amount of positive tests. Generally, it's zero across the board. So is there any concern about the way things are being handled at Nagoya, or maybe the area or whatnot? Because it just seems, or is it just being put down to bad luck on their part?
I think that you can look at Kanazaki and Langerak as, you know, maybe procedures weren't followed as loosely. And I'm not, and that's just a hypothetical. I'm not going to say for sure because I have absolutely no way of knowing that. And I think that all of the clubs in general took it seriously when the virus really emerged and became an issue, especially as they were returning to training. For this, I have to assume, especially based on you see all the training videos, you see all the media that the club is putting out, you see at the games, everyone's masking up, everyone's staying physically distanced on the sidelines. Everyone's staying masked on the buses. Teams are using two buses instead of one to give the players room so that they're not crammed in next to each other. They're doing all the right things. I think today the biggest sort of no-no that came up was, well, maybe the players shouldn't eat when they're on the bus or on the train because that means that they have to pull their mask down. Yeah, you know, it's these little things. You wouldn't expect that eating a bento on the bullet train would cause an infection if nobody else is sitting directly next to you. But here we are. So I think that this is just a bit of bad luck, and just it shows how easily it can spread.
Yes, indeed. Well, it does appear that, Grampus are snake bit at this point in time. But, yeah, we certainly hope that the next round of tests all come back negative, and that, providing all the protocols are met, and, Kashiwa feels safe to travel down to Nagoya on Saturday, that, Grampus' season will resume when they host Kashiwa, as I said, on Saturday. Dan, thanks very much for that update on the situation. Obviously, listeners, you can, I'm sure you're already, but if you're not, make sure you're following Dan on Twitter at Aishiteru Tokyo for the latest on this situation as it unfolds. And, of course, you can always check out his excellent writings in the Japan Times. So, Dan, terrific to catch up. And, look forward to doing so again soon.
No problem, guys. Absolutely. Take care.
Okay, up next, Scott McIntyre will join us to round up J1 Match Day 7. And next, it's our pleasure to welcome Scott McIntyre back to J-Talk. Scott, how are you?
Mr. Maxwell and Mr. Robson, it's good to be back. Thank you. I've been on the road for a little bit with Alex. We were floating around the kind of western coast, the Sanin coast of Japan, which was really good. I've actually been saving a beer I got from Matsumoto, so I just opened that now. But we spent a couple of days there. We went across to Shimane Prefecture, to Matsue City, a really nice little city. We spent some time in Tottori. And then we went back down and hooked up back through Hiroshima and Osaka and back up. So, saw a few little regional, hometowns and stuff. Saw a lot of youth team players kicking around from Gainare, Tottori, who were doing quite well down in J3. And then Matsue City FC, a kind of ambitious regional club there. And they have the posters up all around town as well. You know, it's really good to get out in and amongst these regions where you know, there's, you know, many of them, there's no even professional teams. There's certainly no baseball in a lot of them as well. But, you know, they do have local clubs, yeah, decent kind of facilities and a lot of community support. So, yeah, hopefully in the coming years we'll see, you know, the continued expansion and more of these teams getting the chance to you know, hit it in the professional leagues.
All right. Well, yeah, this coronavirus has been the catalyst for you to get up and actually have a proper look around the country.
Yeah, me and Alex are spreading it. Well, first we spread it in the north, and now we're spreading it in the south. Both times we've had it out right before the big spikes, and then the big spikes have come when we got back. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe we have been spreading it around. But, yeah, anyway, there's only a couple of young midfielders in the J-League that nobody's ever heard of. They're the only people in football that we believe have this virus, right? We believe this, don't we?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Okay. We're great. We all believe only two unknown midfielders are the only two people. Nobody else. Move on.
Yeah. Well, we'll park that for the time being. Obviously, yeah, it's quite pie in the sky. Some might say, but that's the situation as the J-League are reporting it. And yes, well, I might have my head in the sand, but anyway, that's. Yeah, that's the situation, as I said. And, we were speaking in the green room, Scott, about how, these games are all just blending into each other now. So we had a full round, obviously, on Wednesday, match day 6. And then the teams, with the exception of Hiroshima and Nagoya, of course, stumped up again on Sunday in match day 7. So while you've been out and about, I presume you've still been catching all of the games and keeping abreast on what's been going on the pitch.
Yeah, mostly. The games have been coming, as you know, thick and fast. There's been a few that I haven't caught in full, but I've caught at least the highlights of everything. I've been doing a bit of J3 this year as well, so I've been watching a lot of J3 games. So it's all really mixing into my head. You know, the rubbish teams in J1, the rubbish teams in J3, the good teams in J1, the good teams in J3. I don't know what's what. It's good to have football back, but yeah, it's hard enough to watch all this and try and keep track with it. So Lordy knows how the players are going, the coaching. The staff are going. I think we've seen that in you know, the fairly mixed performances from most clubs outside of Kawasaki, I guess, so far.
All right. Well, that provides me with a perfect segue. The first match we're going to talk about from Sunday is a Kawasaki 3, Shonan 1 at Todoroki. So Frontale have carried on their winning ways with two come-from-behind victories in the past week. They found themselves 2-0 down at halftime away to Sendai on Wednesday night with Sam's favourite Shun Nagasawa and Ryohei Michibuchi scoring for Vegalta. But Yu Kobayashi came off the bench at halftime and scored twice in 10 second-half minutes, with Miki Yamane netting the equaliser just a minute after Kobayashi's first to turn the game on its head. Then Toru Oniki made 5 changes to his starting 11 for the home Kanagawa derby against Shonan on Sunday. But Tariq El-Yanusi scored a brilliant bicycle kick from the penalty spot in the 57th minute to give visiting Belmare the lead as they hope to build on Wednesday's first win of the season at home against Kashima. The turnaround wasn't as swift as Wednesday for Frontale, but Yamane levelled things up just past the hour with his second goal in as many games. And then Kaoru Mitoma and Ao Tanaka scored in the last 12 minutes to wrap up the 3 points. Belmare would not want to look back at the video of this on their defending for pretty much all three of the Frontale goals. But, Scott, they've been scoring for fun. That's at least 3 goals in each of their last 5 games. But I don't know, is there a sense that they've had to be awoken from their slumber by falling behind in games? Is there anything for Mr. Oniki to worry about there, do you think? Perhaps when they come up against some sterner defences? Or will their attacking prowess and different routes to goal continue to power them ahead?
Well, I'm sure Neil Debnam won't be totally happy about the way that they've played, but I think they've been very impressive. As I said, really the benchmark so far in the season, and you referenced those changes. The great thing, you know, in the last whatever a decade or so at Frontale has been this ability to just plug players in when needed. Of course, Kobayashi missed the start of the restart. You know, he's come back off the bench and really proven his worth with a couple of goals. But in his stead, you know, we've seen young Hasegawa. He's not that young, is he? But you know, he was. in brilliant form before picking up a knock a couple of games ago. He's out. Then what do? They just plug in these other guys. You know, Hatate started in this game. You had Miyashiro coming off the bench and Mitoma, of course, coming off the bench to score the second in this game as well. And you lose a little bit, obviously, in quality, but you don't lose as much, I think, relative to other teams in the league when they're changing, you know, whatever it is, five or six players, because these guys, many of them have, you know, come up through the club for many years. A couple of good youngsters from the club out on loans at various J2 and J3 clubs as well. And, you know, they're going to be very good returns for them, I think, in the next year or two as well. But they've really got quality, you know, all over the pitch. I mean, the last couple of games, Yamane has turned into something of Cafu. You know what I mean? This guy basically started out his career as a central midfielder. He's been adapted and converted into a right back. I saw a story today, you know, now all these, you know, articles are coming out and linking him with a call-up to the Japan squad after these two performances. But he's been a steadying option. And you look at, I mean, even that position, right? They've got Marguinho, who's on loan at Yokohama FC. In my opinion, he's probably been one of their better players. You know, he was loaned out because Yamane came in. Jessio, we should say, returned from injury in this game as well, which is a big, you know, addition to the squad as well. So, you know, defensively they have had concerns, but you've got Jessiel, who, you know, Sam and I have talked about. He's, I think, probably for both of us, one of our favourite defenders in the J-League. Yamane has been exceptional. Taniguchi has been the usual kind of steadying presence that he is. So you fix those issues defensively, then you. I really like this, you know, rejig 4-3-3 that they're using this year. Tanaka at the base of it. Wakizaka has really blossomed and developed this season as well, setting up goals, scoring goals, and the fact that you've got this settled team with, you know, predominantly Damian up front, which we were calling for most of the last season, but, you know, for some reason he couldn't seem to crack regular starts. And then the wide players, you know, whether it's Hasegawa, whether it's Kobayashi played through the middle a bit in this game as well, and then Ienaga in kind of career best form of late on the right as well. So it's really all clicking for Kawasaki. You know, I said right at the start, I think the more dour teams will do well, but yeah, it's been proven that the, you know, not all of them, but certainly the positive approach that Kawasaki have showed has worked well, and I think they've been really, really well served by these guys. You know, guys like Shimoda, Morita. You know, these guys. Well, Morita was in the Japan squad not too long ago, and he can't get a start. You know, so when you are rotating, you're bringing in players of that kind of quality, plus the youngsters that they've had in the club. I think they're in a very strong position. Of course, injuries will play a factor of, you know, for all teams. I don't know what happens if they lose, you know, Damian. Kobayashi seems to be, you know, a little bit injury prone of late, and, you know, we all know what can happen with Oshima as well. So, you know, an injury to one or two kind of guys up front could damage them, but, you know, at the moment they're the benchmark for the league.
Yeah, no question. And Sam, I mean, yeah, I'm not really trying to make a story out of nothing here, but I mean, yeah, Mr. Oniki will probably be, I don't know, a little bit happy at the fact that they have been forced to work to get back into these games, because, I mean, yeah, going forward, they just look irresistible at times. And the fact that, yeah, I mean, he's at least got something to work with on the training pitch as he tries to get them as, you know, as highly strung as he can. I mean, the fact that they've come from behind twice in a week and ended up winning both games convincingly is, well, yeah, it's a credit to the whole squad. As Scott's mentioned, so many names there. I mean, and some of the youngsters coming through. I mean, it's frightening for the rest of the league if they're going to be in this sort of form and if they can carry it on consistently.
Yeah, well, I think as a manager, you'd probably like the games to go as they did against Tokyo, as they did against Kashiwa. You'd get it over and done with pretty quickly. But you'll definitely see the positive, the last two results, going behind 2-0 in midweek, 1-0 here, and it's, yeah, the fighting spirit has been shown, and it just shows the squad depth which Scott was mentioning. It's just for them to be able to bring off the bench Oshima, Leandro Damian and Mitoma, for example, at the weekend. They just added more quality, and with the five subs as well, this squad depth can be used even more, because when you're going into your fourth and fifth sub at other clubs, then you may be resorting to youth players coming on or really quite poor players. But with Kawasaki, the depth is so good. Like, Mitoma hasn't had a start yet, but he's been one of the more impressive players for me in the last few games, just coming in off the left. He scored a fantastic goal in this game, and there's just options all over the pitch. As mentioned, Morita was not starting, and he's like a Japan international, very good central midfielder. So, yeah, there's so many good options there. I agree with Scott in terms of the injury problems that could be in this squad, say if Kurumaya has to play centre-back, as he did for two games. I think the reason they were conceding goals against Sendai, for example, is probably because Kurumaya is not a great centre-back. He's a left-back that's converted. So if he has to have any spell at centre-back for any length of time, then they're going to be in trouble because there aren't really proper centre-back options behind Hestiel and Taniguchi. So that's definitely the concern. But it's good for them that they're getting Damian and Kobayashi back playing, both in decent form. Kobayashi looks a little bit more composed than we've been used to him. He's taken his chances well the last couple of games. So yeah, I've got nothing but praise for the way Kawasaki are playing, to come back from behind and then to win the games earlier in the season that they did. I think, yeah, I'm very happy with my J-Pred prediction at the moment.
Yeah, and fair enough too. All right, so just before we leave this game, a brief word on Belmare then. I mean, they were outshot 24-3 here. I mean, they could have been 3-0 down inside the first 20 minutes, but, I mean, they rode that storm and ended up taking the lead. Sam, just a quick word on Elyounoussi's excellent goal. Not quite in the pecking order for a goal of the season contender for you, or did you rate it a little bit more highly than I did?
I mean, it's a very good finish. The placement, the technique is great. It's the first thing he's really done since joining the league, and I'm glad he is turning up a bit. I mean, it's one of those goals where if you concede it, you just put your hands up and say, yeah, very good goal. I still think there are ones slightly better than we've scored this season, but take nothing away from the technique to get his foot up that high, to place it into the corner. It's a really, really good goal.
Indeed, indeed. And, yeah, so as I said, they notched their first win of the season last Wednesday, Belmare, at home against the Kashima Antlers. So that's quite a scalp for them, even though Antlers are below them in the table after seven games. The four teams are locked together at the foot of the table on 4 points. So I mentioned whether Kawasaki might struggle a little bit when a sterner test presents itself. Well, that might be coming this Saturday, when the league opens up and Frontale have to head down to Osaka to face Gumba, who zipped up from fifth to second in the past week with two clean sheet victories. Obviously, they'll be hard pressed to keep a clean sheet against the Kawasaki juggernaut, but we shall see. Gento Miura's 41st minute goal led Gumba to a 1-0 home win over Hiroshima on Wednesday. Then they made the short trip to face Kobe in a Kansai derby on Sunday, with Yuji Ono opening the scoring with his first Gumba goal just past the hour, and the Kobe killer Takashi Usami netted for the 9th time against Vissel in the league. He sealed the win in the last 5 minutes. So Elyounoussi didn't quite crack the goal of the season conversation, Scott, but does Usami make it? It was quite a spectacular second on the evening for Gumba, wasn't it?
Yeah, well struck from long range. It did take a touch on the way through that I'm not sure if it didn't, that it wouldn't have not been saved. But yeah, good goal. And for me, I think along with Furuhashi, he's been the most impressive, and perhaps we can throw Lundgren into that basket as well, the most impressive players after the restart. You know, he's been involved in a lot of what Gumba's done. I'm still not completely convinced that where are they sitting now, second or whatever, they're going to be serious title challenges. This game was a fair snooze fest for most of the first half, hardly any chances. And I think the 2-0 is certainly a little bit harsh on Kobe, who probably had the better of the chances overall. And Furuhashi certainly had two or three very good openings that were well saved by Higashi Gucci. But a good strike. I mean, Gumba, as we said right through the preseason, they have the squad to be where they are. I don't think they've been playing the most dazzling or attractive football, but they are versatile, tactically flexible in switching between four central defenders and three. You've got a very good in-form forward in Usami, and this kind of situation is well served for the likes of someone like Endo, who can play one game, have rest, can play the next, and they've got the squad's fairly healthy. You've got options where you can put Ono in. You saw the danger he did here. Yajima will start one game, will not. Karata will be in, he'll be out. You've got very good options. Watanabe has been some kind of a late career a surge in terms of goals, a little bit unexpected. But, you know, you've got then Adam Nilsson, you've got, you know, I think Patrick as well off the bench. You've got a lot of options for the wide roles, and all of this is happening without your major off-season signing. Shorji's still not able to get into the team for whatever reason as well. So, you know, it's been a positive start. I've not been completely blown away by them, and I don't not completely sure I'd put them in the basket of title challenges in a normal season. But yeah, so far they've been doing quite well. You know, like I said, I think the 2-0 is a little bit harsh here on Corby, but yeah, it's another win that moves them closer to the top.
Sure, and a very good point there on Higashiguchi. I mean, yeah, any other day, yeah, Kyogo Furuhashi might have had a couple, and yeah, Andres Iniesta sent him through on a couple of occasions. But yeah, Higashiguchi right on top of his game between the sticks. So, Sam, yeah, I think Gumba might have snuck up on a few people so far this season. Obviously, one of the biggest clubs in the league, no question. And yeah, they have a championship pedigree in the history of their club. But well, yeah, they really have a chance to announce themselves as contenders this season if they can keep it tight again at the back when Kawasaki come calling on Saturday night.
Yeah, they could well do. I'm with Scott. I have them maybe like Champions League was where I think they could challenge for. Maybe not the league, but like Kawasaki, they're just the squad depth is the key for them. They've got so many options, as been mentioned, just to rotate in midfield, and then you've got your striker scoring off the bench. That's always a good thing. The only problem will be defence if Shoji is not getting fit for whatever reason. I know he missed a lot of time at the end of Toulouse with his niggling ankle injury, which, although supposedly he's over it, it doesn't seem that way if he's not making the squad. So if they lose another Amura as well back there, then they're quite short at the back. But otherwise, I think they're going along quite well. I agree they're not playing particularly exciting football, but it's kind of workmanlike. They're getting the results, and kind of when you have so many games in such a period, you just have to get the result. It doesn't really matter too much about how well you're playing, and I think they're doing just enough. I think Higashiguchi he's been very good in goal, but I think it's weird this season, for whatever reason, the Japanese goalkeepers as a whole have taken something, because they're actually performing well and actually making saves and catching crosses. I don't know what league I'm watching, but yeah, that's been quite refreshing and one of the takeaways I've had from the start of this season. But yeah, I think Gamba as a whole, they're chugging along quite nicely. It's a real test for them to play Kawasaki. How can they defend against that? Because they've so far looked quite solid with that that back three. But I'd argue that the side of the draw, if you like, in the way that the teams that they've played is a weaker side than the side with Kawasaki, Kashima, Tokyo, Urawa, Kashiwa, etc. So it'd be interesting to see how they face up against what I would say would be the best attack they've come across so far this season.
Well, yeah, okay, well, let's do a little bit on that then, because, I mean, we're usually a review podcast, but, I mean, well, this becomes the biggest game of the season so far, first visiting second on Saturday night, and, okay, you've both just said that you're not convinced yet that that Gumba are, you know, right up there at the upper echelons of the J1 teams at the moment, as it stands after seven games, and that's fair enough. So, Scott, how do you see this game going then? Is this just going to be a war of attrition where Kawasaki dominate possession and ultimately wear Gumba down and try and find a way past Higashiguchi? Or, I mean, you've mentioned Asami's one of the form players of the league since the restart. So how confident are you that Gumba will be able to land some blows on Frontale, as we've seen in the last couple of games? They have been susceptible and they've fallen behind in the last two games. So if that were to happen again, Gumba might be the most equipped of their recent opponents to try and keep them out.
Yeah, well, we could see an early test of that defensive depth, because I think Takao actually picked up a knock and was taken off late in this game. So you'd have to imagine that he is in some doubt. So, yeah, do we see Shoji in this game, or do we see you know, them having to turn to someone else? Suginomo, I actually noticed in the last couple of games they've been promoting a lot of the younger kind of players from the 23s onto the bench. So maybe we'll see a younger player. But I think if that backline was disrupted in any way, I think Onose, the right wing back, is carrying some kind of a knock as well, which kept him out of this match too. So if there, and you know, Fukuda's a decent replacement in that role, but if there are some defensive concerns, and quite honestly, yeah, the way that Kawasaki are playing, even if there isn't, I just think they're in too much of a good vein of form, and you know, positivity, of course, Gumbra coming off flying four straight wins as well, right? So they're you know, obviously not struggling in the confidence stakes, but Kawasaki are just playing you know, so impressively defensively in attack, and as Sam said, getting very good contributions, game-turning contributions off the bench. I think if it was to go as expected, yeah, I really would think that Kawasaki would go down and look to make a statement. It is, you know, one versus two, and it gives you a little bit of a buffer, you know, early in the season. If you were to pick up a win on the road, obviously we know the way that Frontale played, they're not going to go there with anything less than picking up a win as their intention, and, yeah, I'd fancy them to do it.
I'd be a little bit more positive, I think, on Gamba. As long as they can get that defensive unit set right and just hold them, there is enough about the way Kawasaki have defended in the past few years where they'll be thinking that they can get at them on a counter-attack. And when you've got Usami, and I imagine as long as he's fit, Adam Ilson will come back in, and those two on the counter-attack are as dangerous as anyone. So I think there are definitely ways that Gamba can nick a goal in this game, and I wouldn't have them blowing Kawasaki away at all, but I could definitely see a 1-0, 2-1, just kind of what we have, we hold if they get in front. So I think, yeah, there's enough quality about Gamba, so I wouldn't be ruling them out at all.
All right, well, yeah, it shapes as an absolute cracker. The highlight of the match day 8 slate, no question, 7 o'clock Saturday night at the Panasonic Stadium Suite. Get it watched, listeners, if you can, wherever you are around the world. Yeah, it should be an excellent game. All right, well, so Gumba moved above Nagoya Grampus and into second on Sunday. Of course, Grampus not playing due to their fixture being postponed. So I guess that has slightly put their momentum on hold, Grampus, following their impressive 3-0 away win at Oita on Wednesday. Yutaka Yoshida put them ahead just past the half hour. Then a couple of FC Tokyo old boys, Yuichi Maruyama and Takuji Yonemoto, wrapped up the win with second half goals. So before we move on to the other games that were actually played on Sunday, Scott, we better give Grampus their due from last Wednesday. And while we know that Massimo Ficcadenti is most definitely not your cup of tea, he appears to have Grampus heading in the right direction, unbeaten after six games. Or should I probably have directed this question to Sam?
No, I'm not sure. Sam referenced these kind of out-of-body experiences after the restart, and Nagoya is one of them, because I've actually been playing fairly impressive football, which is not anything I ever thought I would say under a Ficcadenti team. Maybe they read Joe's comments. You saw these comments from Joe when he went back to Brazil, and he basically said that he hated his time in Japan because the people had no passion or life. I wondered if he was talking about his coach. But he's come out and really turned them into a decent kind of side somehow. You know, Narase and Yoshida, I think, have given them defensive control and surprisingly a bit of width going forward in attack. And it's a very settled side. You know, Mateus is a lively, creative threat. Arbear has turned into something of a creator in chief, usually in the number 10 role as well, and you know, when he's played and not been suspended, young Soma, of course, is a very fine technical player. And then you look again at the quality that they have to come off the bench, you know, the likes of Gabriel Xavier and Jao Schmidt would start in most, if not all, J-League clubs. I still think they're a little bit light in front of goal. I'm not completely convinced by Kanazaki, and certainly there's little to no depth behind him. But as it's standing at the moment, they're playing quite positively, you know. I mean, if they do get a goal in front, they're not necessarily going to be, you know, the most risk-taking side going around. But, yeah, you know, kudos to them, because they're not doing it necessarily by grinding things out. They have it a little bit more creative and positivity about them, and yeah, they are pretty much where they are, I think, on merit.
Yeah, it was one of my big worries coming into this season, just looking at a team that had Mateus and Sommer and Xavier and whoever it might be, and just thinking, what is Ficcadenti going to do to these? Is Mateus going to be playing right wing back or something? But he has allowed them to have a license to go forward, because Inagaki and Yonemoto, I think, are his first choice in central midfield, which aren't the most flashy players, but they do such a good job in front of that back line. And if those two are sitting, it just does allow the rest of the team to go and express themselves. And they've been doing really well. I can't say, can't praise them highly enough. I think this game being postponed at the weekend may have been a slight blessing in disguise, because I think the midfield three of Inagaki, Yonemoto and Abe all got injured in midweek, so that would have been interesting to see how they formed a midfield against Hiroshima if all three were out. So maybe it was a good for them that they've got this break now until their next game. But yeah, on paper, that front 11 is doing very, very well. Langerak has been sensational in between the sticks, like every other goalkeeper seemingly, but Langerak, I think, is a cut above every other goalkeeper in this league. And yeah, there's a good quality there. So yeah, fair play to Nagoya.
Sam, I missed your last comment there. What was that?
Oh, I was just saying that Langerak is probably a step above every other goalkeeper in this
league. Sorry, I missed you again.
He's a decent goalkeeper.
did you say Kosuke Nakamura was a cut above every goalkeeper in the league?
Got you. I criticised it last week, not Nakamura.
I saw that. I noted that, the camera safe comment. No, I agree. Mitch is obviously someone that I like a lot, and he's been absolutely fantastic. And if it wasn't for my boyfriend, he would be the best goalkeeper in the league.
Rightio, then. Yeah, so Grampus sitting third, as we said, with a game in hand after what took place over the weekend. And, off to a good start along the lines of Gunma Osaka. So, two of the bigger name clubs in the league firing up towards the top of the table. FC Tokyo and Cerezo Osaka sit level on points with Grampus, so five behind our leaders Kawasaki, after both drew their pair of games in the past week. Seimuroya's late strike earned Tokyo a point away to Sapporo in Consadole's first home game of the season on Wednesday, and then they fell behind to Everaldo's 34th minute header away at Kashima, but then a flurry on the stroke of half time took them into the Sheds 2-1 ahead after centre back pairing Tsuyoshi Watanabe and Masato Morishige headed in Hirotaka Mita corners. Yes, Mita is still around and back and banging, as it turns out. But the Capital Club were unable to maintain their advantage. We've just talked about Scott's boyfriend, Kosuke Nakamura. Well, my boyfriend, Sean Madoy, picked the wrong game to score his first goal of the season. A smart 75th minute finish, just 8 minutes after coming off the bench. So, a point from both of their games this week for Tokyo, while the Antlers remain mired in the bottom three. I mentioned earlier they lost in disappointing fashion 1-0 at Shonan last Wednesday. So we're going to come on to Cerezo, but firstly, Sam, on FC Tokyo's two results, I guess at the end of the day, especially the Sapporo game, they will have been fairly happy to come away from that with a point. But then, when you get a team like a giant like Kashima on the ropes and lead away from home, you're really disappointed with yourselves that you're not able to hang on to that advantage.
I think, I could say you'd be disappointed after taking the lead 2-1, but I thought Kashima were the better team across the 90 minutes, especially second half. I thought they'd put Tokyo under quite a bit of pressure and they deserved their equaliser. I think Tokyo, I just think that midfield is just a worry for me, the way that Higashi's now out as well after losing Hashimoto. It just looks really thin in there. I know Mita came back into the team and put in two very good corners, but in terms of his actual midfield play, I think there's a little bit lacking there with him, Abe and Takahashi, just in terms of the steel in midfield. And I thought Kashima, as the game went on, kind of took a bit more control in that game. So I'm not... I think you take the 2 points. I thought the Sapporo one, the way that Sapporo going back for their first home game since the season started, you were always going to be up against it, as Marinos found at the weekend. So I thought to come away with the point there was a good result. And here, I think, if I was a Tokyo fan, I'd just be happy and relieved to have got away with that. Even though going into the game, you see the struggles that Kashima have had, you'd be maybe expecting a victory in the game. But I think in terms of how the game went, I'd have probably had Kashima just edging it.
Yeah, fair enough. What do you reckon, Scott? Yeah, I mean, yeah, the 2 points banked, and yeah, not two of the more hospitable places to visit in the league, I suppose. So yeah, at the end of the day, you bank the 2 points and move on to the next home game.
Yeah, well, of course, Leandro was ineligible to participate here due to being on loan. I mean, he's probably been Tokyo's best player up to this point of the season. It's just, you know, it's back to how Tokyo were, right? If it's not own goal scoring, it's kind of goals from central defenders, from, you know, from set piece situations. Fair enough, you're going to take them however they come. I think Kashima have been a little bit unlucky this season. You know, we've heard Zago has come out repeatedly, you know, with all sorts of dossiers of statistics backing up, you know, that they've been creating the most chances from here, there and everywhere in these games. And there certainly is quite a bit about them going forward defensively. I'm not convinced at all. Inokai, Machida, Nagato, and Hirose are certainly not even on paper anywhere near one of the best defensive units in the league. But they still have you know, fine central midfielders, and you know, we've seen the new Brazilians, Alano and Everaldo, kind of grow into these roles in the last couple of weeks. It's a shame that I think Ueda's out for a month or so. You know, just when he was starting to come back from injury and look good, but yeah, I think, you know, the return of Endo to the team has helped give them a little bit more flair, and then, you know, other players, the introduction of, you know, young guys like Someno, you know, Izumi can't even crack regular size. So going forward, they've certainly got enough about them, and I think more than enough to be wherever they are down in I think a second last at the moment. So yeah, I mean, you know, I think Tokyo probably edged the first half here, Kashima the second. Maybe on the balance of things, the draw is a decent result. I'm not sure Tokyo have been quite as good as the standings suggested. I'm certainly sure that Kashima aren't as bad as yeah, you know, second last on the early season standings suggests either.
No, fair enough. All right, so we mentioned it when Hashimoto left, Scott, and Sam's just raised the problem again, especially although we, you know, we never like to rely on Keigo Higashi. He is a warm body, and when he's out as well, then that obviously really stretches the depth. So can you see any way around this, this lack of depth in central midfield for Tokyo? I mean, it looks very, very worrying, unless you're going to try and turn a defender into a central midfielder, and we saw how that worked many years ago when Yuhei Tokunaga was tried in central midfield, and it just didn't work. I mean, it seems like a problem that's going to persist unless they dip their feet into the transfer market.
Yeah, well, that's the obvious way to go about it, especially if they've received a transfer fee. It's worth noting all these Japanese clubs have this bizarre approach where, you know, they accept these transfers pending physicals from European clubs. We obviously saw it with Hashimoto, got away with. We saw it with Endo from Marinos at the weekend, and then they go out and play them with whatever, you know, because they can sell a T-shirt or you know, they have to have them crying on a microphone before the end of the game or whatever. But it's, yeah, it's a very strange approach that just the Endo injury had me returning to what happened with Hashimoto. I'm not sure that it may not work. You know, Morishige has at points played further forward. Perhaps it's worth trying Omari, I don't know, in that role. But for me, if you're looking internally, two young players that I've always had big raps on are Shinada and Hirakawa, from the youth teams, both of which I believe are Japan youth internationals as well. So if you have these guys in the club, maybe now is the time. You know, we've seen Abe come on when given a chance and do reasonably well. We've seen Kono have his moments off the bench as well. I'm not convinced, as you guys said previously, about Arthur Silva, but you do have two Japanese youth internationals at your club who aren't getting much of a game. So maybe now is the time to give them a chance. Of course, we saw Watanabe really as well, through circumstance, come in and cement a spot as well. So I wouldn't mind one or perhaps both of those getting a look in the coming weeks. Of course, we can't forget that the Levain Cup is coming back at some point. That won't benefit to Tokyo though, with the ACL, but it may benefit other teams. But if you do have, you know, some of these players, maybe, you know, with the rotation, it is a chance to have a look at them and see if you have something there. Yeah, or if not, maybe, yeah, dip into the transfer market. It took, I think today with Zico, it took him a while to come back from, you know, from quarantine. So there are ways to get players from overseas. I'm sure there's a lot of players from other countries that wouldn't mind a stint in a country that has no coronavirus cases outside of hostess club workers and unknown reserve level footballers. So maybe they'll come to the non-corona paradise that is Japan.
Yeah, fair enough. And, Rei Hirakawa, of course, came through with the Tokyo under-18s when a certain Takefusa Kubo was making his way as well. So, he's a name that Tokyo supporters have known for quite a while. And, we wonder if he's ever going to get a proper first-team chat. Still very young himself, of course. But, we'll see. He might get an opportunity or two this season to show what he can do. All right. Well, I mentioned Cerezo are also on 14 points after their two draws this week. They played out a 0-0 at home against Kobe on Wednesday, and then on Sunday they became the first team all season to find themselves behind against Tosu. Of course, back on Wednesday, Riki Harakawa's 35th minute equaliser at home against Shimizu was Sagan's first goal of the season, and then on Sunday Kaisei Ishii put them into uncharted waters 6 minutes into the second half. They were ahead with a lead to protect. That advantage lasted all of 24 minutes before Tatsuhiro Sakamoto, we mentioned with Alan in a recent episode, netted his first J1 goal in the 75th minute to earn the pink half of Osaka a point. So, so that's two draws for Cerezo in the week and also two for Tosu as well. Sam, Cerezo, we mentioned that it was not going to be pretty at times this season with them, and that they would be one of the masters of grinding out results. Here they've gotten 2 points when I would hazard to say that four was the absolute minimum that Mr. Latina would have been after.
Yeah, you can't lose to, I can't not beat Sagan Tosu. For any team, I think it's a poor result, and especially for Cerezo, who have eyes on a top four finish, for example. I think they're just kind of against a team like Tosu can't attack, and I mean, I know they're on incredible goal scoring form at the moment, but they're based on a really decently solid defence, which, and then Cerezo would kind of, they want to play the same way and defend, so really no one was really attacking with any great gusto in this game, and there was only like one moment of quality really from Sakamoto to get a goal for Cerezo. Otherwise they lacked a real centre forward. Tokoro was out, Bruno Mendes was out, so Toyokawa played but didn't really give them much of a focal point to aim for when they were coming forward, and they kind of lacked ideas. It wasn't like it was a barrage of Cerezo attacks and saves from the goalkeeper or anything. It was kind of an even game. Tosu, as usual, were restricted to mainly long-range efforts, and eventually one from the edge of the area went in. It was a good finish, actually, from Yungi Shihi. It was a good, nice left-footed effort, but otherwise Tosu don't look like a threat as long as you keep them at distance, and Cerezo just, there was no real quality going and challenge for the top, because in these tight games there's not always that spark to get a goal when they need one.
All right, listeners, you probably noticed that Sam dropped out there for a couple of seconds as he was finishing up his point, but
he was overrun by the Tosu midfield.
Yeah, you did just drop out for a couple of seconds, Sam, but you're back with us now, so hopefully that will that'll be the only time that occurs. And, the listeners were obviously wondering what was going on there for 3 seconds, but, everything is now appears to be back to normal. All right, so we're halfway through the 8 games that were played on Sunday, so stretch your leg, listeners, and we'll be back in a moment with the other 4 games to complete the match day.
What if you have 2 legs?
Yeah.
It's a podcast for amputees.
Urawa are 6th after a hugely contrasting week. They were smashed 4-0 at home by Kashiwa on Wednesday. More on that shortly. But they bounced back with a 2-0 away win at Yokohama FC on Sunday. Leonardo opening the scoring with his 3rd of the season, 7 minutes into the second half. And fellow Brazilian Everton wrapping up the points deep into stoppage time. Was this the right fixture at the right time for Reds, Scott, to help them put the Reysol loss in their rear-view mirror? It looks like Yokohama FC were found out again at this level after a disheartening 4-0 loss for themselves in the Yokohama derby last Wednesday.
Yeah, they weren't. That certainly wasn't a 4-0 game, by the way. They were quite decent value in that game, FC. And I think I was the lone voice, certainly at the start of the season, that said I didn't think they were going to get relegated. And I'm absolutely correct in that assertion that they're not going to get relegated. But they have. I think they've been. This was their worst game of the season, this Reds game. But I think they've generally been quite positive. They've obviously lost Rokitan in goal, which has made a big difference. Yuta Minami is keeping up the 40-year-old quota at Yokohama FC in this really kind of weird approach. Nakamura started for the first game here as well. King Kazu, we should note for those outside of Japan, has been prominently launched on a series of kind of stickers on this social media application line. It's very popular over here this week, so that's as close to actually seeing the King in action as we have seen. But good to see that we did get two other 40-year-olds from their stable on the pitch this week. You've seen young Kobayashi came in from Kobe. In central defence, I think, has been quite good for them. And they've got some, as we've mentioned repeatedly, some good attacking threats. And actually, Ichimi has surprised me a lot, with his kind of efforts in front of goal. But, yeah, this game, they were not quite a match for Urawa, who did make a lot of changes. I think I tipped you guys off to the fact that Makino was out in the cold in pre-season, and he's basically been frozen out of the squad. I mean, he's been fit and available for selection, but prior to this game, I think he had one appearance off the bench, and that was almost certainly grudgingly. but he was back here. The Australian Thomas Deng is still unavailable. And there are a couple of other rotation injury issues at the back for them as well. So Makino played. He did reasonably well, actually. And then, this Leonardo, the goal he scored, it doesn't look that impressive, but he's picked up the ball. He's made the run. He's powered onto it and finished it very, very calmly. And when I was watching it, I said what I said to you guys again at the start of the season, that this guy will be leading the line. I'm convinced of it for Japan at the World Cup. Let's hope in 2022 in Qatar, if we have a World Cup, not after. And I think, he has the potential to be, should he become captain, to be one of Japan's greatest goal scorers. Because if he was playing in a team that was presenting him with more opportunities, the kind of the likes of which Olunga is getting from Race, or certainly in the last three or four matches, this guy is a goal a game striker. He's an absolutely clinical finisher. He's a fantastic player. Actually, when we were in Tottori, of all places, Alex and I on this trip, we looked up his history, because I remember that he started out at Gainare, and apparently they had a, unbeknownst to me, some kind of a decent scouting setup with, I think it was Masayuki Okno, the former Japan striker, was involved in the club. And they went specifically across to Brazil to watch him and another player who I believe is still on the books of Gainare, but obviously hasn't had the explosive career that he has. They brought him across to Tottori, and he scored almost a goal a game there. Then he went across to Niigata, who scored almost a goal a game there. And now he's in J1, and he's almost scoring a goal a game for Red. So kudos to those guys. Really against all sorts of odds from the far wilds of Western Japan, who've gone across and found this guy and brought him over, because they could find a guy that I don't think there's a better striker. If he was to get nationality, as he's said repeatedly, I think he would be a shoo-in to be starting for Japan at number 9. He's an absolutely brilliant footballer. I really, really like him. And he made the difference with the first goal. Reds weren't particularly troubled thereafter, and that was capped off in the third minute of injury time by the suddenly prolific number 6, the holding midfielder, Ewerton as well, who popped up from close range to finish it off. But I think you take Leonardo out of this side, I'm not sure they're anywhere near as good. And of course, you take out my secondary boyfriend, you all know who that is as well, the left back Yamanaka, who, by the way, has been exceptional and is also Japan's best left back. So Reds Reds have their qualities, their elements. I'm not sure that it's quite enough with Mr. Otsuki pulling the reins. A decent win, and I think on the balance of things, a deserved win here as well.
All right, fair enough. Well, Sam, we've spoken at length about Yokohama FC in the last couple of weeks, so I think, we might just, we'll move on and, we'll let them stew on these two decent losses, decent-sized losses in the past week. I do take Scott's point that, yeah, they were pretty hard done by the scoreline at 4-0 last Wednesday night. But, disappointing for them that they weren't able to do more at home against Reds on Sunday. All right, well, yeah, a couple of weeks ago we worried for Kashiwa after they lost their first three games after the resumption, but they have roared back with three straight wins to rise to seventh. They simply stunned Urawa on Wednesday. The walking yellow card, Richardson, was true to form before opening the scoring just past the half hour. So, yes, he's capable of doing stuff on the other end of the pitch as well. And then two goals in quick succession from the prolific Michael Olunga and Hayato Nakama saw them kick clear early in the second half before Yuta Kamiya put the icing on the cake a minute from time. A 4-0 away win at Saitama Stadium. They don't come much sweeter than that for a visiting side. And then for an encore, they won on Sunday by four clear goals as well at home against Sendai. This time it was 5-1 to Reysol, paced again by Olunga, who scored a hat-trick and had a penalty saved, so it could have been even more for the Kenyan. Nakama scored again, and a first of the season for Yusuke Sagawa wrapped up the scoring. Early in the second half, Takuma Nishimura had reduced Sendai's arrears to 2-1, and they might have thought they would be able to get something from the game at that point, but then, Olunga took it away from them. So, Sam, well, yeah, we say a week is a long time in football. Well, the past 2 weeks, the turnaround in Kashiwa, after they admittedly weren't super flashed to squeak their way past Shonan, but that got them back to winning ways, and since then, they've really made some hay in the past week.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty poor against Shonan, but got the victory, and as you say, it's given them the confidence. They tore apart Reds in midweek, although a little bit of debt to Kosuke Nakamura, who's come back in for these last three games.
He
was sensational against Urawa, fantastic performance. He had a bit less to do here, and the only goal he conceded was because Ominami decided an ankle height ball needed to be headed away, and completely messed that up, and Nishimura scored. But otherwise, I thought the last two performances have been pretty perfect for Kashiwa. I think I mentioned him last week, but Nakama, who's come in, just has added an extra dimension to the way they attack. They had Kamiya as well for the last two games. He got injured at the weekend, but then Sagawa came in. He was superb. The one cross he made, it was the ball going towards the byline. He has to stretch for it. I'm not sure if he necessarily kept it in or not, but was given the benefit of the doubt, and he hooks a perfect cross onto Olunga's head. And it was just everything they did worked really well. Sendai were a little bit suicidal in the way they defended, with a ridiculously high line against Kashiwa, which is never going to work. Olunga put them to the sword. Just, it was pretty similar to the way he was playing against Sapporo in that first game, where he was given the freedom of the pitch to run into, and then he's got such quality and composure in front of goal. As you mentioned, he missed his penalty, but he could have had 3, 4, 5 extra, as well as the goals he did score, the amount of chances he had, and the way they just the link-up play between that whole front line behind him with Nakama, Kamiya and Sagawa, Esaka looked good as well. So I thought, yeah, really, really good performance. The worries are at the back, and it was shown here with the way they conceded, but going forward, they're a bit on their day, they're an irresistible force.
Yeah, I think that something is going on with Russell, because I'm not quite sure what's happened. I believe that Somea has a knock, but Jiro Kamata wasn't in the squad either here, and of course Kobayashi, the right back, is out as well. So they've got quite a few quite a few changes in goal. But for me, I think really the shift at the start of the season and for most of last year, they basically played a 4-1-4-1 with one kind of shielding midfielder. They've switched back here to a 4-2-3-1, which allows Ataru Esaka to really get on the ball often in the midfield. The combination that he has with Olunga is also very good. And I echo Sam's thought that, both the guys in and out playing basically as wingers in Nakama and Kamiya have also been really, really good. So I think the balance of the squad looks a lot better for me in this kind of formation. The restoration of my boyfriend in goal has helped him a lot. There's a bit of a mystery actually about what's happening with Jakub Slovic in the Sendai goal. Of course, Samyang Obata started this game as well. I don't know if there's some kind of issues behind the scenes with the judge. I note that the Sendai fans that I've been reading about are not particularly happy with the new coach, already calling for his head as well. Yes, so struggles for Sendai, but I agree with what Sam said in recent weeks. Racel have looked really, really impressive. There was no butcher, actually. Actually, Ben, I should tell you this. So when Alex and I were actually in, here's a question for you, Mr. Maxwell. You've been in Japan for a long time. What is the most famous tourist attraction in Tottori?
That'd be the sand dunes.
Very well done. Not many people know this. So we went to these sand dunes. Sam, if you don't know these, they're actually, have you been
No,
there?
I haven't, mate, no.
Yeah, they're really, really astonishing. You know, like, geez, I don't know, 30, 40 metres high. And we climbed all the way to the top. It was a blazing hot day. And then we went down the other side. We met some people and we said, can we go swimming in the ocean? And they said, no, you better not. So, of course, we immediately went and did it. so we were swimming nude in the Sea of Japan. And then I put the podcast on for some reason whilst I was swimming. And I listened to your diatribe against Richardson. Right. And, everyone who was coming down the other side of the sand dunes heard these two foreigners laughing very much at your little Axeman take there and didn't come and join us, unfortunately, in the Sea of Japan, nude. Forever my memories of Richardson will be tied to that day. Yeah, so the Axeman, unfortunately, wasn't here. But, Kashiwara are looking really good.
Yeah, terrific stuff. That's a great anecdote, Scott. I really appreciate that. I'll carry that one with me. That's the terrific stuff. Yeah, imagining you nude listening to Jason. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, then. Well, let's move on swiftly, if I may. Just to wrap it up, Olunga is absolutely on fire. No questions asked. He's already up to 8 goals for the season after 7 match days at 6 in the last 3 games. And if you get a chance to check out the highlights, listeners, obviously I agree with Sam. I think the Sendai were a little bit hard done to on the first goal. The ball was probably out of play, but the linesman wasn't able to keep up with it. But yeah, Olunga's second and third were terrific. And in particular, the control for the third goal, where the ball basically just appears to be glued to his foot, and he's able to flick it out without getting it out of his feet before a sliding defender could get in the way of it, was absolutely remarkable. So Michael Olunga in fantastic form, no question. All right, so we've got two games left to do, gents. So we'll move on next to the game from early on Sunday that roused Sam from his slumber. And, quite an entertaining game it turned out to be. A lot happened in 3 first half minutes. That's where we saw 3 of the 4 goals. As Sapporo beat Yokohama F. Marinos 3-1. We've already mentioned Wednesday's results for both of these clubs. Of course, Sapporo played out a 1-1 draw at home against Tokyo, and Yokohama F. Marinos beat Yokohama FC 4-0 in the Yokohama Derby. F. Marinos made a good start in the 15th minute when Jun Amano gave them the lead. But, if you blinked, you missed it, as within 3 minutes, Sapporo were ahead. Yoshiaki Komai, the veteran, scored his first ever J1 goal in the 16th minute, and then Takuma Arano gave Sapporo the lead just 2 minutes later. In between those 2 goals, F. Marinos lost Keita Endo to injury in the 17th minute in what is apparently going to be his farewell match, as Scott mentioned earlier, before he heads off to Union Berlin of Germany on loan. And finally the 3 points were settled for the hosts right towards the end when Takuro Kaneko scored his first J-League goal in the 89th minute. So, contrasting results for a lot of clubs this week, and Yokohama F. Marinos are just the latest example, Scott. They're struggling for consistency, I think you'd agree, but we know obviously what they're capable of, and it's very early doors with games coming thick and fast, of course, and I think that's the second time we've used that phrase on this podcast, so you can check that off your J-Talk bingo board if you're playing along at home. But, I mean, if they're going to defend to 2018 levels, Scott, is it 12 points already too big a gap to make up on Kawasaki?
No.
If they're gonna defend like
we played 6 games.
If they're gonna defend like this though.
But that's okay, because they still have the capability to score more goals than any other team. I mean, you look at the players that were missing. The most important defensive player, Thiago Martins, is still injured. He missed here. The best goalkeeper, Park Il-gyu, was absent here. Eric, who we are now imagining the absence of, Endo, was missing here. The J-League's best two players, Marcos Junior and Terahito Nakagawa, were both missing here as well. Yeah, I mean, it was not a vintage performance. It was a game that they deserved to lose. There's absolutely no questions about it. And there's also no questions that things haven't been clicking for Mariners. Honestly, they've been rotating a little bit more than I expected they would at this point in time. And I think it's really been impacting them. For the third goal here, Ito made an absolute meal of an attempted header. And, you know, they rightly got punished off that. So there's been... there's been clear errors. I'm not sure that some of the players that have come in have really added a great deal to the squad, and there's certainly no question that the rotation is really, really hurting them. They're not, for me, it's not so much the defensive concerns that are going to be a problem, because the way that Ange plays, they're always going to be issues. But it's the fluidity that's been lacking in attack. They'll have spells of, as they did here in this game, of about 5 to 10 minutes where they play, you know, to the kind of best way that they were playing last year. Superb, you know, little passing movements in and around the box. But, you know, lacking those players, you know, a Nakagawa, a Marcos, the guys that, you know, risky passes in tight windows that will stick 9 times out of 10 when they're playing won't stick as often in this case, and that leaves them naturally exposed on the counter. That's always going to be the way that things unfold for them, you know, when those players are absent. So if the rotation continues and, you know, given the amount of injury-prone guys, you know, they have in the squad, maybe they need to rotate as much as they are, then, you know, there may be issues, but they're capable of scoring at any moment in any game from almost any situation on the pitch. So what we could see is perhaps a lot more of the kind of scorelines that we saw in the first year. You know, if you're a betting man, I'd be getting on the 2.5 goals plus in pretty much every Yokohama, and while we're at it, Shimizu, games going forward for the rest of the year. But they're absolutely... you know, more than capable of scoring more than they concede in most games. They got punished here, but you know, I think in most other you know, situations, certainly when, you know, the core of their key players are present and starting, I still think, no matter where they are, where are they? They're, what, 16th or so? They're 11th. Okay, so yeah, it's so early in the season. These games are so crazy, so hectic. And I'm sorry to interject, but we just saw, I don't know if you saw the news tonight, that the champion, the AFC came out today and said that the groups, I believe, involving Kobe, it's definitely Marinos. Maybe it's Marinos and Tokyo, but not Kobe, I forget. But two of the Japanese groups, it's been announced that they'll be playing the ACL in a centralized venue in Kuala Lumpur in these, you know, alleged dates a couple of months from now. You know, still pretty sure that that's not going to happen. But this is a concern for Mariners going forward if they did need to go across them there as well. But, you know, they haven't been playing well. There's no question they haven't been playing anywhere near as good as they did last year. There's absolutely no question of that. But there's also no question that, you know, they have a philosophy in place and when fit players to execute it to a very high level. And yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about where they're sitting at all.
All right, fair enough then. Well, yeah, I would like to reiterate that I did say that we know what they're capable of, but yeah, I mean, they're going to have to buck up their ideas, because the Kawasaki are just going to run away with things as things stand at the at the moment. But Sam, we better give Sapporo some due for a first home win of the season, and yeah, well, they'll be wrapped after obviously losing the lead so late on Wednesday at home against Tokyo to finish off the defending champions on your home patch is a very sweet feeling, I'm sure, for Misha Petrovic and his side.
Yeah, I mean, Marinos had their issues in this game, but I think a lot was created by the way that Sapporo set themselves up. I thought Petrovic got it tactically spot on, because they've lost Suzuki to injury, and they've been playing Bothroyd or Douglas Oliveira as a central striker, and it's not really worked for them. Neither of them have played too well this season, so they kind of started without a striker. They played Chanatip and Komai and Nakano were the three that were kind of starting in between the midfielders and the defence, and no one could pick them up. And I think there was a problem with Marinos not having Thiago Martins there, because there was no real leadership and no one took on board who's going to pick up who, and it caused various players to get isolated. The two wing backs just really struggled. Tiraton was subbed at half time because he was caught one-on-one with Lucas Fernandez all the time and just kept fouling him, kept giving away free kicks, and just the movement of those three players caused them so many problems. I thought Takuma Arano came back in from his suspension and played very well. I know that there was a lot of criticism of him for the way he got sent off last weekend, and he kind of responded with a really good performance. He was instrumental in a couple of the goals. So I thought, just generally, Consadole played really well. They limited Marinos to very few chances. I mean, the Armano goal is a very well-taken goal, but it's 25, 30 yards out. So it's not like they were kind of getting in on the goal, and Sugano in goal anyway has had a very good start to this season, so they wouldn't have worried too much. And they did this without Akito Fukumori at the back as well. So I thought really, really good performance from Sapporo. They controlled the game to get back into it as well after conceding 1-0 to Marinos. You would fear the worst against that team, but to click in and go straight away, I know they caused a few of it was through errors. The third goal was Ito. The second goal was Hatanaka. He just easily dispossessed his own corner. So they did take advantage of some poor play. But I thought just the way they were set up was perfectly balanced to well the Yokohama play. And it just really kind of, there were weaknesses there. They spotted those weaknesses. And the way they played just really took advantage of those.
Most definitely. All right, well, yes, Sapporo at home for the third consecutive game this Sunday, the only game from Match Day 8 to be played on Sunday. That's an early afternoon kickoff. Sam, I'm sure you're looking forward to getting up early for that one as well when Vissel Kobe head up to the Sapporo Dome. We'll touch on some of the other fixtures from Match Day 8 after we finish with the final game of the round in Match Day 7. It was played at Nihon Daira, and I have to apologise to Shimizu for selling them short in this game. I had a feeling they were due a bit of an offensive outburst, despite Wednesday's draw at Tosu, that saw them notch a first point of the season. I tipped them for a 3-1 win in the transfer market prediction game. Well, both they and Oita went one better. Espols were home and dry here, 4-0 up, with all four goals coming as a result of set pieces. Valdo got the last of them in the 84th minute, but they then switched off and allowed two Trinita consolations in a minute before the end of the game. But notably for Espols, who remain bottom, well, joint bottom actually, in 17th with Kashima. Carlinhos is up and running, Scott. He got the opener against Tosu, and he grabbed the second on Sunday with a close range finish. Peter Klimoski will obviously be hoping he's finding a groove with the top half teams, Urawa and Sapporo, coming up in their next two games.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has been to switch him from a kind of wide role where he was playing earlier in the season into a more central option. I mean, I don't know if it was through circumstance or through choice, because the options, you know, in terms of a traditional centre forward, you know, Sam and you may have just as strong a chance as playing as Tirasin and a couple of the other rather mediocre options that they have at the club. I know they are looking to spend the money they got from Douglas, but I don't know if that will be coming this year. So the shift to Carlinhos, you know, playing through the middle, I think has worked quite well for them. All four goals here came from set-piece situations. Should also mention that there was an extensive delay in this game, almost, I think it was almost an hour, actually, due to lightning. So just when it looked like Shimizu were in, you know, position for their first win, they were 2-0 up at the time. There was all this, you know, concern that it might have been called off. And you remember that game we had a couple of years ago with lightning up in Kashima, and you had to come back and restart the game from who knows when, whenever. But I think, you know, even though all those goals did come from set pieces, three of them from really fine deliveries from Nishizawa as well, who was superb in this game. It was a game that, you know, except for the last 5 minutes, that Shimizu really controlled and bossed. And obviously I'm quite close with the coaching staff at the club, and I'm pleased for them. And I think, you know, the fruits of what they've been working on, you could see. They've been playing exceptional football in 10 to 15 minute windows in most of the games. They certainly don't have the talent of players to be playing at the level that Pete wants them to be playing at. But there's real signs of progression, I think. Mostly that they weren't actually that good, to be honest, in the Tulsa game, but they were here. So you can see progress generally game on game. You know, as I said to you guys at the start of the year, this is going to be a real season of struggle. I think I said that they would be last coming into the midway point of the season, and things would improve as the year develops. And you know, the great thing about the no relegation is there's a bit of freedom to do that. You know, he's obviously played a lot of youngsters. You know, he's brought guys through. Young Yuito Suzuki has started quite a few games, came off the bench here. Togo Umeda, who I know that they have very high raps on, believing that you know, he can be the number one for them next year and going forward, and certainly, you know, maybe, you know, even in the place for higher honours. I'm not really the biggest fan of Hugo Tutsida, the kind of lumbering central defender, but he's improved a little bit under the coaching, you know, going forward. And, you know, Nishizawa and there's, you know, a couple of other younger options, Nakamura and so on, that are also floating around the club. And I believe just this week they promoted a few other players from the youth team that we could see in the bonanza that's coming up in the Levain Cup next week. So I think that there's definitely positive signs for S-Pulse, and you know, on everything that I've seen, the script has gone exactly as I expected to do. They've been very, very good in small glimpses going forward, playing exactly the way that Pete wants them to play. The consistency is lacking. Defensive concerns under the way that they play are always going to be present, but it was always going to be a season of hardship building into more positivity late in the year. And then next year, they're absolutely going to be one of the teams to watch. It's just for supporters of the club getting over that, for neutrals and not really paying much attention to, you know, to where they are on the standings at the moment, because it was always going to be difficult. But, you know, the moments that they have within games, when they do dominate for these little spells, you know, they're one of the best attacking teams in the league. And that's only going to get better and better, you know, in year two and year three of this project, when, you know, you think I'm an imbecile now, but you watch what's being built now, and it's really going to play out in year two and year three.
All right, fair enough then. Yeah, so great for Peter Klimovsky to get a first league win as S-Pulse boss under his belt, and it'll be interesting to see how they get on when they head to Saitama Stadium to face Urawa in match day 8. Sam, feel free to add on to Scott's points about Shimizu there if you like, but also Oita, quite a rough week for them. Of course, the two consolations are somewhat papering over the cracks here, but yeah, they were beaten convincingly 3-0 by Nagoya in the week, and then obviously 4-0 down with 3 minutes to go away at S-Pulse before, yeah, those two late goals, well, it helped their goal difference if nothing else. But yeah, I mean, I guess, it's always going to be a struggle for an encore for Oita here, and I guess they're still, you know, they're just playing with house money at this stage. But yeah, no questions, a very, very rough week for them.
Yeah, there are symptoms of second season syndrome at the moment. I don't think that they're not hit anywhere near the heights that they did the start of last season. They almost even tailed off last season once they achieved where they wanted to be. There was no ambition for them to go any higher. And they don't look like they've got that ambition this season either. They're just kind of content that they're going to be in J1 next season, so it doesn't really matter. I think they've struggled to replace the likes of Fujimoto who left and Onayu. I think Chinen obviously scored in this game, but that was just because Valdo let him go and just waved him goodbye. It just terrible defending. He just, as soon as he got the wrong side of him, it just stopped. So, but it was good for Chinen to get that goal, because I mean, there were that, when he was at Kawasaki, there were those rumours that they was being linked with a move to play for the Japan national team, which never really came to fruition, and he hasn't looked like a Japan national team striker so far this season. And Watari, who got a good header a couple of games ago, but generally speaking is not a front level striker in J1, so that's been their main issue, I think, this season. And in this game, defensively, it's atrocious. To concede, you don't want to concede to Shimizu from set pieces, because if you can deal with the way they go forward, they do play quite good football going forward, but generally this season they've missed too many chances. But in this game, they just gave them three headers from corners, like just three centre-halves scoring from headers, and you can't allow that. There was the one goal, Takagi wasn't doing too much, and there was the one goal, he bounced just in front of him, and it looked like he treated it as if Shane Warne had bowled a leg spin delivery and completely bamboozled him. It was just horrendous. That's not what they were like last season. They were really well regimented and organised. Suzuki, Iwata and Misawa were a really steady back line. So I just wonder if they're having to chop and change a little bit. They've got themselves out of a rhythm, because last season you could pretty much pick what the Oita team was going to be, give or take one or two players. But this season they've not got that consistency. And to be honest, I don't think they're that bothered. I think they're quite content to finish wherever they finish up, and then they'll go again next season. Maybe I'm a bit too harsh on them, but that's just the way I've seen them play. They've only beaten Sagan Tosu, and they beat San Freche with a late burst, but otherwise they've been generally pretty poor all season.
Yeah, can't argue with that, but as I say, yeah, playing with house money and the no relegation this season is obviously going to be beneficial for a number of teams, and at this stage, although they're not right down in the thick of the muck at the bottom just yet. Yeah, Oita have definitely suffered through a very ordinary week, no questions asked. All right then, so yeah, all of the eight games that were played in match day seven have just been rounded up. Of course, Hiroshima versus Nagoya will be made up at a date to be announced. So, we've already mentioned some of the games that are coming up this Saturday and Sunday in match day eight. There are three games on Saturday kicking off at 6 p.m. The pick of them, no question, is Nagoya hosting Kashiwa Reysol, unbeaten Grampus, of course. Well, hopefully they'll be able to get a team out on the pitch when Reysol head to the Toyota Stadium. And, the juggernaut that is a Kashiwa Reysol in the recent weeks, that should be an absolute cracker. In any other week, that would probably be a lay-down mazare for match of the round. But, we've already mentioned what that is in match day 8 at 7 p.m. at the Panasonic Stadium Suite. Gamba Osaka in second place will host the unbeaten leaders Kawasaki Frontale, and that promises to be an absolutely terrific clash. And as I've said, the one game on Sunday is the early game, 2 p.m. Sapporo hosting Kobe. All right, Scott. Well, yeah, terrific to catch up with you again and to get that thought of you listening to the podcast in the nude in the Sea of Japan into my brain. Absolutely tremendous stuff. So, terrific to catch up with you. Enjoy the football and wherever you head next with Alex Bishop, and I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Well, the plan is to go to Kyushu on the next of our little adventures. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Great great chatting. Great, as always, to be joined by Mr. Robson. And thank you so much for providing me entertainment to swim nude in the sea to.
You're very welcome.
Yes, it's our pleasure, most definitely. No questions asked about that. All right, Samble, terrific stuff again, as usual. And, you've got that early game on Sunday to look forward to that I'm sure you're already looking forward to / dreading.
Well, at least it's Sapporo, who do definitely play good football, and it's worth getting up for. If it was Sagan Tosu every week that were playing at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., then there'd be no chance I'd be quitting.
indeed. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. We'd like to thank Dan Olowitz and Scott McIntyre. We'd like to thank our patrons for their support on Patreon, and we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up match day 8 of the J1 season. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast.